was thinking, and we could head home now. We've been in church. We've worshiped. His presence has been real here this morning. I'm so grateful for him. But we're not going to. Don't get your hopes up. We're not shutting it down quite yet. We've been looking at some of the history of, in Scripture, some of the stories from Scripture. And as mentioned before, we can't do all of them. There's way, way too many. So we're going to jump forward. Last week we talked about the flood and the fact that God hit reset on creation. And men went on, and then from that point, Noah and his children lived. And Genesis 6 goes through some of that. That's a little early. Genesis 11 goes through and talks about the children of Noah, and then gives a little brief genealogy there. And then it comes down to a man named Terah. A man named Terah. Not a man we're really overly familiar with. Are you going to cooperate? I may have to have you advance it, Jonathan. It's not liking me at the moment. We'll see if it starts working better. Terah. Terah lived in Ur. And we're putting some things together from different passages that refer to this. So not all the information will be on the screen necessarily. Acts 7, Stephen talks about it. Joshua, as they go into Canaan, to take Canaan, he refers to this. So some of this information is coming from elsewhere than just on the screen. But Terah lives in Ur of the Chaldees. It's a large, prosperous city over on the Euphrates River. The Euphrates River Valley is a major trade route. And so Ur has become very prosperous, very large. And Terah apparently is quite wealthy there in Ur. He lives there with his family, with his three children, Abram, Nahor, and Haran. And we're told his eldest son, or his son Haran, which many feel may have been his eldest, died in Ur. It says in the presence of his father, Terah. So this has affected Terah, apparently. This is a major life event for Terah. And it would be to have your son, possibly your eldest son, die right in front of you. Joshua tells us they're idolaters. His family is actually a family of idolaters. They worship strange gods. Ur is largely dedicated to the moon god in that day. So this is not a good Christian family. Terah is not necessarily a worshiper of God. He's a worshiper of idols. But he lives in Ur, and again, putting things together, while they're in Ur, God speaks to Abram. Now, Abraham, the name is changed halfway through, so it may come out one way or the other as we go through. So if I say Abram or Abraham, understand it's the same guy. And while they're in Ur, God says to Abram, he says, "Go forth from your country and your kindred and your father's house to the land that I will show you. And I'll make of you a great nation, and I'll bless you, and make your name great, and you'll be a blessing. I'll bless those who bless you, and him who dishonors you, I will curse. And in you, all the families of the earth will be blessed." Fascinating statement God gives Abram here. He promises him three things. He says, you will have descendants. And at this point, as we know, Abram's wife Sarai is barren. She's not had children. And so God says, I will give you descendants, I will give you a land, and I'll bless you. And he says, move to the country, move. I'll tell you where you're going once you're on the road, essentially. Now, later, it's Canaan he's heading for, but at this point, he's just telling Abram, go. And Abram obeys. He responds in faith, in obedience. Seems like every time I'm going through these stories, preparing, something strikes me I've never seen before. Throughout this chapter, Abram doesn't seem to get what we see as the greatest part of this promise. Later, Paul says, when God says to Abram, in you all the families of the earth will be blessed, he's referring to Christ bringing salvation to the whole world. By far, the greatest part of this promise is this last part. In you, all families of the earth will be blessed. Because through Abram, Christ comes and brings salvation. But that part kind of goes over his head. He never refers to it. The only other place it's mentioned is when God brings it up later in chapter 17 when he says, he mentions Abram is the man through whom all families of the earth will be blessed. But Abram never mentions it, and it doesn't really register. Sometimes God's greatest blessings are incredibly unexpected. Sometimes we have an idea, we have a thought, we have a plan, and God's plan goes so much farther that we have never even dreamed of what God's wanting to do. And if he explained it to us, we wouldn't get it sometimes. But he comes to Abram, he says, I will give you descendants, I'll give you a land of your own, a huge land, and I will bless the entire earth through you if you'll move to Canaan. Well, this is happening still in Ur. Now, putting the pieces together, apparently, Terah then says, okay, we can do that. Now, Terah is Abram's father, all right? In that culture, family is incredibly strong. The family ties, you don't break family ties. And so Abram does not have the right in that culture to say, okay, Dad, I'm leaving, goodbye, and take off. But Terah apparently agrees, okay, we'll do this. So Terah sets out to help Abram fulfill God's call. That's fascinating. That Terah moves away from Ur and takes with him Lot and Abram and possibly others. They're not mentioned, but they show up later in Haran, so maybe at the same time or maybe not. But Terah takes his family, apparently in response to God's talking to Abram, says, okay, we'll go. And they went forth together, it says, from Ur of the Chaldeans to go into the land of Canaan. But when they came to Haran, they settled there. Isn't that interesting? So let's see what's going on here. Ur is here on this is the Euphrates River. Ur is here. Canaan's over here. Haran's up here. It seems to be that Terah is very wealthy. Wealth in those days is not just money, all right? It's not just gold and silver. It's that, but it's also livestock. A lot of wealth is in livestock because you didn't have stock market in that day, all right? You didn't buy gold futures. If you had gold, you had it, and it was, yeah, it was there. It was valuable, but it didn't grow. If you want to grow your wealth, you have livestock because livestock has more livestock. And so it's very likely Terah has quite a lot of livestock. It's really, really hard to take a large bunch of livestock, think a cattle drive, all right, through the desert. That's not easy. So instead of going across the desert, they follow what would make much more sense, go on up, follow the trade route up to Haran. Haran is at a major crossroads for trade routes in that day, and then follow another trade route back down into Canaan. That would make sense. So Terah sets out to help Abram fulfill God's call. He gets as far as Haran and goes, wow, this is a good place. Another place it says is well, this describes this land as like the garden of the Lord. All right, now I know that's from a different passage, but it's a reference to this area. This is the Fertile Crescent. Incredible place to live if you're a farmer, if you have livestock. You've got crossroads of trade routes right here. You can get really, really wealthy here in Haran. And so Terah says, you know what? Canaan doesn't look that good. We're staying here. So the man who apparently starts out to help Abram fulfill God's call ends up being the one sitting back and saying, nope, change the plan. We're not. Now, I don't know if that's ever happened to you in your life. It's happened in mine a number of years ago, but I could tell you the situation. I'm not going to. But someone who will say, yeah, I just want to help you fulfill what God's put on your heart, then pulls the rug out from under you. And that's going to happen at different times in life. It's up to you whether you let that make you, it's up to you whether you let that make you bitter or say, you know what, God's still in control, and if God wanted to work out, he would have worked it out. All right? So Terah is an example of a man who could have been known throughout history and stood with Abram as one of the men who are fulfilling God's call. Instead, he gets a few little verses and that's it. And nobody knows him. Because he starts out to help fulfill the call of Abraham and just drops it. Gets distracted by wealth, by opportunity. How do we know that Haran was a good place for wealth? Well, later on it says Abraham finally goes to Canaan, he says he took all the wealth and the people he acquired in Haran. So the family business, the family fortunes grow in this place. But miss God's call. And they settle there until Terah dies. Once Terah dies, then Abram is free to move on. Understand that it's a tribal structure in many ways. The father had absolute authority over that family. So Abram didn't have the right to say, okay, I'm leaving. He stayed until Terah passed away. Then he moved on to Canaan. I'm sure that he's remembering God's call. The whole time he's in Haran, I can just picture him going to Terah and saying, you said we're going to Canaan. We're not supposed to be here. And Terah says, well, yeah, but look at, we have three times as much livestock as when we got here. We have agreements with the merchants that are moving through. We're making money hand over fist here. And Abram's going, but Canaan. Terah won't move. He stays there until he passes away, passes off the scene. Then Abram remembers the call. Go to Canaan. And he follows up on it. To do this, he has to leave his home. He has to leave his family because he has extended family there. Apparently, Terah and the family of Abraham, his brothers and so on, become very influential because the city of Haran is the same name as Abraham's brother who died. Haran was his brother. So it may well be the city was actually later named after Haran. And by the time Moses is writing this book, it's known as Haran. So instead of using the previous name, he uses Haran. There's other cities in the area named after family members. Abraham's family becomes very powerful, very wealthy in this area. When Terah dies, Abram gets his portion of the inheritance and heads to Canaan because he knows that's where God wants him. He could have stayed there and made a lot more money, had a lot of influence, had a lot of power. But he says, no, I'm heading where God calls me. He has to break with his past. He doesn't know the future. Canaan, it's a big land. There are people there already. You can't just walk in and say, hey, I'm here now, y'all leave. He's going to, doesn't know where, but he goes. He doesn't know what the future holds. He doesn't know where he's going. He breaks with his past and says, God is calling me and I am following. And heads off down to Canaan. So Abram went, as the Lord told him. And Lot went with him, his nephew, the son of Haran who died. And he heads out down there. And so when they come to the land of Canaan, Abram passed through the land to the place at Shechem, to the Oak of Merah. And that kind of becomes his central. He comes back here a couple times. But he has no permanent home. He never founds a city. He never names anything after himself. For a long time, he has no children. He's a nomad, traveling. Yeah, he's rich. He's wealthy. He has lots of servants and lots of livestock and lots of gold, but he's wandering. He's a nomad, traveling from place to place throughout Canaan. Just because God said, go to Canaan, he didn't say where to go. And so he's there. He's followed God. He's cut his ties, and he's just followed God to nowhere, it seems like. Just wandering around the land of Canaan. But he gets there, and the Lord appears to him again and says, to your offspring, I will give this land. Okay, you're here now, Abraham. It's going to be yours. Your family will possess this land. Now, Abraham never built a city. As I said, never named anything after himself. Left no monuments. What he left were altars. We find as he moves around, he builds altars. We're told about some of them. He may have built many more. We don't know. But the first thing he does, he gets there, and the Lord appears to him, and he built there an altar to the Lord. From there, he moved to the hill country, to the east of Bethel, and pitched his tent, and he built an altar to the Lord. And what we find is, Abram, the only thing he's leaving behind are altars. The only thing he's building are altars. Other than that, he has tents. Everything's movable, but he's leaving altars, marks of his dedication to God, behind. That's a pretty good inheritance. That's a pretty good heritage to leave. God made Abram rich. He used Haran's disobedience to make Abram rich. Doesn't make their disobedience okay, but God can use what he will to do what he will. But Abram's not, you don't find Abram doing a lot with his wealth. What you find is building altars over and over. And he journeyed later on. He journeyed from there to the Negev, as far as Bethel. And he built an altar there. And there he called on the name of the Lord. And you move on. The Lord said, lift up your eyes and look at the place around you. And again, Abraham moved and built an altar. The only thing he did was build altars. The only thing he received for a long, long time of this wandering are promises. God says, I'm going to give it to your descendants. And finally, may I say with all respect, Abram's had enough. He's frustrated because he's been promised this over and over, and all he's done is wander, and there's nothing happening. I don't know if you ever feel that way. God puts us through those times. We follow him, we obey him, and nothing happens. And that's where Abram is. For 25 years, 24 years, he's wandering. He's building altars. So finally one time, God says to him, I am the Lord who brought you out of Ur the Chaldeans. I told you to come here. I brought you out here to give you this land to possess. And Abram finally says, how do I know that? God, I've followed you. I've come here. I've done what you want. How do I know that I'm going to possess this land? Because nothing's happening. And we could sit here with the advantage of years and perspective and say, he should have just trusted him. I mean, he should have just, why'd he question him? But the reality is, God is okay with us coming to him with our questions. Jesus on the cross, why have you forsaken me? God responds to an honest heart. And here is Abram after years and years of following God and doing what God says and not worrying about his own heritage, cutting off his family past, his connections, which in that culture are incredibly important. And finally says, God, how do I know? My faith is really weak right now. How do I know? When we go to God with our questions, that's huge. That's huge. If you have doubts, if you have questions, go to God with it. One of my favorite little cameos, if you will, from the New Testament is when early in Jesus' ministry, and John the Baptist is in prison, and he sends people to Jesus saying, are you really the Messiah? You know, John's the one who had introduced Jesus as the Messiah. Here's the Lamb of God that takes away the sin of the world. This is the one we've waited for. Go to him. He must increase. I must decrease. But he hits this low point and sends people to Jesus saying, are you really the Messiah? And Jesus says, tell him what's going on. Reassure his faith. And then we end the story there. Read the next verse or two. At that point, Jesus turns around and says, John is the greatest prophet this world has ever seen. At the point, John's at his weakest, struggling with faith, saying, is this really real? But taking it to Jesus, Jesus says, that's the greatest prophet ever. That's incredible. So here Abram is. God, is this really, how do I know? How do I know? And God gives more information. He doesn't always give information, all right? He does in this case. He says, okay, here's what's going on. Know for certain your offspring will be sojourners in a land that is not theirs. All right, Abraham, this is not happening right away. It'll be a process. And we'll be servants, and they'll serve them for 400 years. But then I'll bring them back. Don't worry, Abraham. My plan's in place. It's being taken care of. It's going to be a while. But it's okay. And it seems like that satisfies Abraham. We don't see him coming back saying, are you sure? Now we find him doing other things that he shouldn't have and trying to work it out his own way and causing problems. But his faith grabbed hold of that. Years later, we know the story. Isaac's born miraculously. Well, Ishmael's born, then Isaac's born. Then we miss the fact that it says other sons and daughters were born to Abraham. Isaac was not an only child from Sarai, or Sarah at that point. So he has the son of promise. Finally, things are happening as they should, as he's seeing results of his obedience. And one night, historians tell us Isaac at this point is probably late teens. One night, God wakes up Abraham and says, I want you to take Isaac and go sacrifice him. Go to the land of Moriah and sacrifice him on the mountain which I shall tell you of. That's significant. The call to Canaan was, leave your land and go to the place I will tell you of. Here, he says, go to this land, the land of Moriah, this general area, and sacrifice him on the place I'll tell you of. This is Abraham's second great trial. There's other trials, other tests. This is his second great test. The first was, leave your land, cut off your past, and follow me. This one, and follow me, I'm not telling where you're going for sure, just follow me. This one is, cut off your future. Or may I say, put it this way, give me your future and go where I'm telling you without my telling you the details. So Abram stands here. He's already cut his ties to the past. And now God's saying, cut off your future and just trust me. Now, I want to be very, very clear here. God did not want a human sacrifice. God never wants a human sacrifice except our heart, ourself in life. God had no intention of Abram actually killing Isaac. He wanted to see if he was willing to do it. God had a plan. He wasn't going to let him actually go through with it. He wanted to see if he was willing to actually give up on his promised future. We're later told that that Abraham, in Hebrews, it says Abraham thought he'd raise him from the dead. Well, that's faith. No one had ever been raised from the dead up to that point. I mean, the concept we hear now of Jesus raising people from the dead, Jesus came from the dead, we have the concept in mind. At that point, no one had been raised from the dead, ever. But Abraham was like, well, okay, he told me he's the son, and he wants me to kill him, so he'll bring him back. He was off base, but was half on base was his faith. I'm willing to give up my understanding of the future if God tells me to. Of course, God stops him, says, okay, no, don't do it. There's a ram, there's a substitute. There's a lot of symbolism there, the substitute for substitute sacrifice. And then God does something that, again, easy to miss. But what God does at this point is he makes that covenant with Abraham unconditional. At first he said, walk before me and be perfect, be complete, be whole, be fully dedicated to me. Doesn't mean no mistakes. Abraham made lots of mistakes. It means be fully God-oriented in your heart. Walk before me and be perfect, and I will make my covenant with you. Now he says, by myself I have sworn, declares the Lord. That's the highest vow God can take. By myself I have sworn. I am doing this, period. Because you've proven your loyalty to me, I will surely bless you, and I will surely multiply your offspring. And your offspring shall possess the gate of his enemies. In your offspring, all the nations of the earth shall be blessed. When Abram is willing to give up his past, give up his future, give up everything for God, God says, okay, you can have it back. And gives him his son back. Gives him the future he longed for back. But here's the key. If he hadn't, Abram was going to obey. Abram chose the giver over the gift. He'd rather have God and obey him than have what God had promised him for 50 years. Actually, well over 50 years. Abram chose the promiser over the promise. He'd followed that promise. He'd held that promise throughout his whole time in Haran, throughout his whole time in Canaan. But he'd rather have the one who promised than what was promised itself. And that dedication, that willingness to step out, leave his comfort zone, leave everything he knows, step out and walk with God. God chose Abraham to bring blessing to the entire world. We are here this morning because of Abraham. Yes, because of Christ, but God brings Abram through Christ, Christ through Abram. We are literally here this morning because Abram followed God. Incredible, incredible blessing. There's one more story, and Adrienne's going to have her closing song. There's one more story, sort of like this, different story, but different, but same idea in the New Testament. The story, we know the story of Peter in the boat. Well, the boat's Peter's comfort zone. He's raised on the water. He's a fisherman. He knows boats inside out and backwards. He's very comfortable in that boat. But one time he's out and sees Jesus walking on the water. And being Peter, being impetuous, he says, wow, that's incredible. I want to do that too. And in this moment of enthusiasm, of maybe misguided enthusiasm, maybe whatever. But in this moment of enthusiasm, he says, Jesus, let me come to you. And Jesus says, okay, come on. And Peter jumps out of the boat and starts walking. As long as he's looking at Jesus, he's walking on the water. He has these few incredible moments of literally walking on water, looking at Jesus. And that is that's the picture behind this song. I wanted to introduce that because you have to understand that picture to understand this song. But I want you to get this. We are all called to do that. To step out of our comfort zone, what we're used to, what we like, what we're comfortable with. And when God says come or go, we do it. Abram didn't have a clue what's going to happen, but he knew he had to go. Peter didn't know what was going to happen, but he leapt out of the boat. And my call to you this morning is, whatever God's calling you to, whether it's to trust him with your life in salvation, whether it's a ministry opportunity that you're not sure if you should do it or not, whether it's something that's too close to your heart and God's saying, you need to give me that, and then let me give it back if I want, if I choose to, but let me have it. Whatever it is you're being called to do this morning, let's do it. Even if it's on the water, the will of God is the only safe place to be this morning. Again, if you know this song, you're welcome to sing along. If you don't, then just understand God is calling us to follow him. Jesus is calling us to follow him out of the boat, out of the city, out of wherever we are, at his call.